Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. It's time for, of course, the food maven to arrive on the scene. Arthur joins us here on a Monday, and we rebroadcast it on the weekends, also once a week during our noontime news break. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Is that when I'm on, the noontime news break?
We put you on at various times because you're a very popular guy.
Well, thank you. I mean, thank everybody in the audience who's made me popular.
You've made yourself.
It's true.
Come on. You've been popular for, like, what, about 45 years?
I mean,
maybe?
I hate to say it.
Yeah.
But this winter, it will be 51 years.
And I mean,
you, and I am old. Yes,
and
I started young. It's true.
And you're also a groundbreaker, though. Also, really.
Yeah, I am. I was only the third male food editor in America, after Craig Claiborne, and very sadly, I can't remember his name. A gentleman in Florida, I think, actually in Miami, and that was 1969.
Are you done good, Arthur Schwartz?
Well, I did okay. Meantime, in all these many, many years, I have never made potato chips. So I don't know what got into me, where I got this idea that I needed to make potato chips, but I did it. I finally did it. And it's a bit of a process. I thought it was well worth it. The potato chips, to me, was sublime, even though Bob thought they were a little bit bitter. And I think that taste that he identified as bitter, he's what the scientists will tell you is called a super taster. He's extremely sensitive to bitter. Anyway, I may have over-fried them a little bit because I had this idea that they should be browned, when in fact I think, because I was scared that they wouldn't be crisp if I didn't get them a little brown. I didn't make a dark brown, didn't burn them, but I did get color on them. And I think next time I'm going to try taking them out a little earlier. So here's the process. And then I'm going to get to bagged potato chips, too, because now I'm totally obsessed with potato chips. You know, during the coronavirus period, you have to have something focus on, other than what's going on outside my windows, which, by the way, are yesterday at least three different waves of protesters. I have to explain that I live right at the entrance to Prospect Park called Grand Army Plaza, and that is where there are literally tens of thousands of people congregating. So, and also, we went up, we have a roof terrace, so we went up to the roof yesterday afternoon. The first time we socialized in 3 months, some neighbor slash very old friends who have been in the house for 3 months, they haven't even let their daughter into the house. I think they're a little over concerned about certain things. But anyway, that's another story. There were helicopters going overhead here because they were very peaceful protests. It was songs, it was chants. But in any case, back to potato chips. So to make potato chips, you need russet potatoes. That's the baking potato. I had two large baking potatoes in the house. I peeled them. I'm not sure that you absolutely necessarily have to peel them to make good potato chips. There are, you know, commercial ones that have peel on them, but I peeled them. And then I cut them very thin. Oh, I don't know, you know, not paper thin, but very thin, on a mandolin. You can't do this by hand and have them. I mean, if you ever see on a menu hand-cut potato chips, they're cut on a mandolin. Yeah, one hand is on the potato and the other is on the mandolin. A mandolin will slice through things, you know, I don't know, 32nd of an inch. So I slice them very thin. It's sort of fun to do because you slide the potato over this sharp knife. By the way, I have the cheapest possible mandolin. I don't know what they cost these days. I've had it for so many years. It's called a Ben Reiner, and it's the green plastic one. You see it all over the place. You can buy it online. It's probably only about $20. I mean, there are some gorgeous way more professional looking and probably behaving mandolins out there, but and that are popular too. But I like this one. It folds. It goes in a little box. I stash it in my closet here. It's not a problem. Anyway, and I use it a lot. So I do the potatoes, and then you have to, and you do them into cold water. I would suggest that you have a bowl of cold water at hand that you slice the potatoes into, because if they stand out without getting covered with cold water, they will start to turn pink, as some of mine did, but I decided I'd fry them anyway. The pink, I'm very familiar with this pink, because when you make the old-fashioned way, well, if you follow my directions for potato kugel, for Jewish potato pudding, that your potatoes are unlikely to turn pink. But what happens with potatoes is they oxidize very, very quickly. So you put them in water, and then I put a whole tray of ice cubes in the bowl. So you're soaking your potatoes in ice water for at least a half an hour. I think I did mine was more like 45, 50 minutes. Drain the potatoes, rinse them off, and put them back under cold water and let them stand another 15, 20 minutes. Now you drain the potatoes and you spread them out on, I use clean dish towels. You could use paper towels. I don't like to, you know, waste paper towels like that. So not that I'm being frugal. I'm trying to be eco-friendly here, green. So I spread them out on clean towels and pat them dry. And as soon as you do that, you want to start frying. I fried in my, because they will, in fact, get tinged with pink if you don't get them in the fryer soon. I use canola oil, and I maybe a half an inch of canola oil in my black iron skillet, and you get it to be hot enough so that this is how I always measure it. I use the tip of the handle of a wooden spoon, and in fact, I have one here where the handle looks like it's seen better days from doing all this. But anyway, when bubbles surround the handle immediately, not furiously, but immediately, you know the oil is ready. You can try a couple of slices to start, but and if they sizzle right away, you know you got it. If they sizzle furiously, then you know it's too hot, and you need to adjust the heat. I put in as many slices as I could get in a layer. It took maybe 3 or 4 minutes to fry them, and then you spread them out on. Now you can use your paper towel if you want, because nobody has unrecycled brown paper bags anymore. So you have to spread them out on a, or you know, truly, you could just put them on a rack. But you want them, you want any excess oil, which there will be very little of. To drain. I mean, I used the same two pieces of paper towel over and over again. It wasn't that much oil. I was able to reuse it. So as soon as they've drained, you put in another batch. I think the two potatoes, I took at least 4, maybe 5 batches. It took a while to cook. I enjoy frying. It's very meditative because you have to really focus on the fat and the product and adjust the heat accordingly, you know, a little higher, a little lower. You want them to fry and get crisp but not burned. So that's it. Those were so sensational. Oh, by the way, and of course I sprinkle them with salt. I use just my standard salt is a wonderful Sicilian sea salt that I buy at my butcher shop for practically nothing. I have not been to the butcher in 3 months now. I've ordered in meat, but I haven't been to the... He is open in a limited way, and I keep meaning to go, and one reason is I'm running out of salt. And I went online to buy the salt that I use, which is called SoSalt, S-O-Salt. It's evaporated sea salt from Trapani and Marsala, yes, the same place that the wine comes from. And there are salt flats there. I visited the salt flats. I've been to a salt evaporator. And, you know, it's not just that I have a romantic connection to sea salt from Trapani and Marsala, but it's also that it's very, very complex salt. It isn't just sodium chloride. It has other minerals. And so the flavor is a little, you know, the only way you would know, really, is if you put a little on the tip of your finger and tasted it against some other salt. In any case, sprinkled with sea salt, these were divine, and we ate way too many, and meaning we finished them. It didn't take even 2 days, maybe 1 day. I would say that two large baking potatoes make enough potato chips for a card party of four. I always associate potato chips with card parties, not just because my friends in Italy always serve potato chips when they play cards, but I play cards with Bob almost every day. We play an Italian game called Buraco. In any case, my mother always had potato chips in the house only when she had a Mahjong game. Otherwise, we could not be trusted with a bag of potato chips. I mean, she bought a bag of potato chips probably before my father even came home. We would have finished it. So, and then my father would be angry that he missed the potato chips. So we didn't keep potato chips in the house unless it was a special occasion. And it's the same now because I cannot be trusted, and Bob certainly cannot be trusted with a bag of potato chips. So let me say, so we every once in a blue moon, he has to have potato chips, and he'll get one of these tiny bags at the deli. They don't even sell them in the supermarket. He goes across the street to the deli to get a sandwich-sized bag of potato chips. But there's a recipe going around. It was in the Times. I didn't actually read it in the Times, but it's on the website, so I'm assuming that at some point it was in the paper, too. It's a recipe from perhaps the most famous chef in the world. I've been saying his name for days now, and now I'm not thinking, oh, please, Arthur. Anyway, he was the chef. It'll come to me. He was the chef at his restaurant called El Bulli. People came from all over the world to eat at El Bulli. He then gave up the restaurant, and I'm not sure what he does right now. All right, it'll come to me. Anyway, he published a cookbook with a co-writer of supposedly home recipes, even though that was hardly the food he made at El Bulli. Adrian Farran, F-A-R-R-A-N. Andrea Farran. Anyway, this recipe is just potato chips and eggs. It's a kind of, I would call it frittata, but since he is Spanish, he would call it a tortilla. But all you do, I mean, really, I was telling this to my niece last night, and she said, well, that's all? That's the only thing that's in it? It's only eggs and potato chips. And a little bit of olive oil to fry the omelet in. But the interesting thing about this was you beat the eggs until they're really frothy. And the recipe, as published in the New York Times, tells you to beat it for, you know, that this could take 4 minutes, and you should use a balloon whisk for the job. I did not use a balloon whisk. I used what is called a Swedish whisk, which is a flat whisk. It's maybe the cheapest tool in my kitchen and one that I use the most often because that's what I use for making scrambled eggs. I don't usually use it to beat things to a froth, but I knew it would work well in this, so I did that, and it didn't take 4 minutes. Maybe it took two, maybe. And then I only made half the recipe as it has been printed. Has been published. I used 6 eggs and 3 ounces of potato chips. Now, I didn't even know volume-wise how much 3 ounces of potato chips. And now that I say that, I weighed out 3 ounces of potato chips last night because Bob was hitting up the bag, and I did, and I wanted to be sure that I had enough. I don't know if you can hear that.
Yes.
So I just poured them into a measuring cup, and it's four cups of potato chips, and you just fold them pretty much into the foamy eggs, and then you make an omelet, a open-faced omelet, a frittata, tortilla, whatever you want to call it, an omelet. You cook it on one side, and I certainly we were not going to eat 12 eggs with 6 ounces of potato chips. That's why I halved it. I thought 3 eggs with the 3 ounces was really a good omelet, and that's an easy one to flip. So I flipped it. However, if you make the full recipe in a big pan, or you're not very adept at flipping,
underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz.
Pardon me?
Nothing. I hit a button. Oh. I hit a button.
Then you can run it under the broiler for a minute until it's all set, you know. Or maybe even put it in the oven. But I prefer the broiler on the top because the oven, well, I don't want to go into that. I prefer the broiler. So that's it, the whole recipe. 3 ounces of potato chips and 6 eggs. So I go to the supermarket to buy potato chips, now that we've eaten all the homemade ones. Now, if you were Ferran Andrea, you would definitely make your own potato chips. In fact, I think in the head note to the recipe, the person who published the recipe, the writer, mentions that he makes it with blah, blah potato chips, but you could make it with ordinary ones, too. Anyway, I go to my fancy supermarket around the corner, and they don't have regular, ordinary, plain potato chips. They have every known flavor of potato chip, and they have one potato chip that only had salt on it. I said, oh, well, that's okay. That's a plain potato chip. Arthur, who reads labels as a hobby, didn't read the label. I get them home. I read the label, and I find out that they are not fried potato chips.
They're baked.
They are baked potato chips, and they're made with dehydrated potato, rice flour, and some other starch. I forget what. Maybe potato starch, I think it was. And they're puffed. They're baked and puffed. So they were totally the wrong potato chip for this recipe. But I made it anyway because I bought the potato chips and we didn't really like them that much. So I thought, well, let me try this omelet with them. And it was horrible. The texture was gross. It was like egg-soaked cardboard. And I'm not exaggerating. It really... I'm not sure how we got it all down, but we were hungry. It was lunchtime. We didn't want to waste all the eggs and potato chips, so we ate it, but not happily. And now I have real potato chips. So now I'm forced. This is how focused I am on potato chips. Now I am forced for the first time in 3 months to go to the supermarket that I dread going to. Because it's a normal supermarket, and they will certainly have regular potato chips. So they do have regular potato chips, but I, not being a connoisseur of bagged potato chips or any potato, well, I know a good chip when I eat one. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant and they make their own chips, and you say, oh, wow, which is one reason why I made my own. The potato chips, there are vast numbers of potato chips out there. And I decided to leave it to Bob to pick out the potato chips. And he comes up with two major brands, Hers and Lay's. They're kettle-fried potato chips. So he says, why don't we buy both and taste them and see which one we like better? An excuse to have more potato chips now.
That's right.
I know my customer here. One is an 8-ounce bag, and it's interesting. One is an 8-ounce bag, and one is a 5-ounce bag. And I calculated Hers were slightly cheaper than the Lay's. In any case, I'm not buying by price potato chips by price necessarily. you know, whatever happened to good old Wise potato chips?
I was going to say, that's the standard that I go by, the Wise potato chips.
I believe it or not, you have to search for Wise potato chips.
Simply the best potato chips in the old days. They are just the best. Yep.
As my favorite cashier at the dreaded supermarket once said to me, she said, "You got to go to a poor neighborhood to find that. This is a rich neighborhood." It was not about potato chips, though. It was about, don't ask. Anyway, so we bought hers and Lay's, and we've eaten a lot of them, but I've saved the 4 cups that I need to make the omelet, which I'm going to do for lunch today. And I'll report next week. I was going to make it before I got on the air this morning, but then I needed 2 whole cups of coffee to get me going, and it was too late.
Yeah, as a kid, I used to take my grandmother made great potato chips, but I used to buy Wise potato chips, and I would then put them on bread, put a little mayonnaise on it, and I would have a Wise potato chip sandwich.
Oh, my father, no wonder we're fat boys.
My father would just about throw up.
Here's a fat boy one for you, except that they weren't fat. But Bob got a hankering for this after talking about it. His father, who was a bachelor father, Bob grew up with a single father and a sister, no mother. So his father did his best in the kitchen, which wasn't that great, but it was good enough. And one of his treats, his father's treats, was Nilla wafers, vanilla cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Spread with cream cheese.
Oh,
it was. I liked it myself, except that I would really like a dab of something other than the cream cheese. Maybe just a dab of jam or even peanut butter. Some, I don't know. I needed something else going on there. But I must say, and I didn't eat them as sandwich. Bob was eating them as sandwich cookies. I thought one Nilla wafer was enough.
When I was growing up, my grandmother would take ladyfingers, put ladyfingers in the bottom, Nilla wafers, a little bit of her own whipped cream, and she would stack that up about 4 layers, and cover it with saran wrap and put it in the refrigerator. Oh my gosh, when you bought
it
out,
you think it was just whipped cream though?
Oh yeah. And you,
only it's all she had between the layers.
Yeah, but it would sink down. It would sink down.
It would eventually, overnight for sure. It would start breaking down and just moisten the cake.
That's exactly right. But oh my God, was it good? Was it good? But it was
that would be delicious. Yeah. So she alternated those packaged soft lady fingers.
Yes,
and because I remember those, my grandmother used to buy those too, and Nilla wafers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. My grandmother's favorite cookie, I want to get to that in a second. I forgot it almost. No, but just little ones. It was, and you, I'm sure your grandmother, too, those Vienna sandwich cookies.
Oh, that's right.
Remember those?
Yep, absolutely.
I wonder if they still make those.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do.
We probably wouldn't like them today. But here's something I ran across when I was doing you know what? I knew nothing about potato chips, but this kettle thing, they say Kettle Cooked or whatever. There's a whole brand called Kettle Cooked. But beyond that, like these Hers and these Lay's, they were kettle fried. And what that means is that it ends up the normal potato chip is made on a conveyor belt, whereas these are actually dumped into a vat of oil and in batches. Now, I love how they say on the package that it's one batch at a time. But, you know, what's in a batch? 5,000 pounds of potatoes? I mean, really. I'm sure they don't have, like, a black iron skillet on top of the stove. So mine were really one batch at a time. And the other thing is, now my niece knew this. My niece, for various reasons, knew more about potato chips than I did. And she said, "Oh, kettle fried." Right away, she said, "That means they're thicker and crisper
and greasier."
So I don't know about the crisp part because Wise are pretty crisp,
but
they are thicker. So if you get a kettle fried potato chip, it is by definition thicker than a regular Lay's or regular Wise potato chip. So while I'm on the internet looking for potato chip recipes, I remember this is at least 20 years ago, more, 30 years ago even, when I was on WOR, I had an avid listener, a devotee, who was in her 80s and then 90s. I knew her into her early 90s. And I don't even know her name. We all called her Oma, which means grandma in German.
Ooh, yeah.
And it was her adult granddaughter who used to bring her to WOR events so that we could see each other. And she gave me recipes. Now, I have not searched my files for Oma's potato chip cookies, but I remember loving them. And I did a search, and they're out there. There are several recipes, pretty much all the same, for potato chip cookies, which really are kind of shortbread with potato chips in it. This I have to make. These I will make this week. I will actually go out and buy more potato chips so I can do this, because I remember those cookies being divine. And the reason they're divine is, and this is all the recipes, they have a lot of butter. Interestingly, not as much sugar as many cookie recipes. I think it's like, I'm not going to give the proportions. You can find it on the internet easily. If you just go, in fact, there's one that's even called Grandma's Potato Chip Cookies. And I wonder if it derived from Oma that I knew. So Oma, I'm sure, must have passed by now because she was 90 20 years ago.
That's right.
And but I do have a stash of her recipes somewhere. I recently, not so recently, some few years ago, gave literally a shopping bag full of recipes that came from WOR listeners, because my friend, who I gave this to, had a website where she was published. She was testing and commenting and then publishing handwritten recipes was her thing. So, and she just wrote to me a week or two ago, and she said, I'm clean, you know, with the virus, everybody just stays home and cleans, or I stay home and not clean. And she said, what do I do with all these? And I'm going to find out if she still has it, because I bet you Oma's recipes are in that stash. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter, because I'm sure the recipes that I'm finding online for potato chip cookies. By the way, the first recipe I looked at made so many cookies, I said, I can't do this because we can't eat all these cookies, and we could give them away, blah, blah. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe I should just have the recipe. And sure enough, there are recipes that don't call for 2 pounds of butter.
You know, Jill just sent something in there. Her family used to do it with Nabisco chocolate wafers and whipped cream stacked up. And then
it's called a refrigerator cake.
Well, they called it a zebra refrigerator cake.
Oh, so, okay.
So everybody had a little different variant on that, you know?
Well, they all were just, you know, recipes that appeared in magazines.
Yeah. All right. Well,
oh, yeah, exactly. All right.
Well, when I hear Oma, I think of a good friend who was downsized out of a job years ago. So he took his grandmother's marinara recipe and put it together, started off as a small country company called Oma Terceros. And it is a great, great sauce. And he's doing really well now. He actually has a big factory that puts it out. Oma Terceros marinara sauce.
Huh.
Yeah.
Where do I find that?
In the high-class stores.
All right. Well, I'll look in my fancy supermarket.
All right.
All right. Have a great week, everybody.
I'll check in and see how this works out.
Yeah, I'll report on this omelet. I'm going to make it for lunch. As I said, it's 3 ounces. It turns out to be 4 cups of... Don't touch the bob. Just got up. Don't touch the potato chips.
Right. Don't ruin the recipe. That's right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That is Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio. For Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, HGA.